You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Let's have a proper in-depth look at the markets with Joanne Bainham, who's an independent financial advisor, formerly of Myson Optimal. Joanne, at the end of February, I think it was, the S&P futures, I distinctly remember looking at my screen and seeing the near-month S&P futures looking at 3,400. It was 3,397, it was. And then, of course, things intervened, and it went down to 2,162. And as I look at my screen now, the S&P 500 futures are 3,385, which is just 12 points away from all-time record highs. And if I'd have told you that at the end of March, you wouldn't have believed it. Isn't it the most astonishing market 5-6 months you've ever seen in your life?
I would have to say that it is the most astonishing market. And you're right, Lindsay, I would never have believed it. In fact, I thought the markets would maybe go up or down, but then continue to go down again because, you know, the world economy is in big trouble. You know, liquidity is not going to fix the solvency problem. A number of companies around the world will go bankrupt, and yet the markets don't seem to care. It's unbelievable. You know, it's great that we can look in hindsight and explain it all. We can say we know now why it's gone up. But it's Phil, if you told me in March that we'd be here today, I would never have believed you.
No, but the thing is, if you look at, I watch silly programs like BBC Breakfast in the morning, and I see Marks and Spencer's laying off 7,000 people. And I say to myself, well, that's not an economy that is booming. That's not something that engenders optimism for the future. And yet the stock market seems to brush it away. Maybe Marks and Spencer's and 7,000 people doesn't matter to the stock market. Maybe the Robin Hood accounts don't care about that sort of thing. Maybe they're just going with the momentum factor. I don't know. But something doesn't quite gel with me.
Okay, so I think what's actually happened in markets, fundamentals in the so-called sort of value sectors, your cyclical stocks, have continued to deteriorate. Or, okay, that's not entirely true. We are starting to see light at the end of the tunnel. There's hope the next 6 months will be better from an economic perspective. So we're still dealing with the fallout of the COVID virus. But if you look at liquidity and how much liquidity has been pumped to the markets, it's probably in hindsight quite rational to see markets going up because money has gone down in price. So if you just look at it from a relative perspective, if money is now cheaper than it's ever been, well, then stocks become more expensive because where do people put their money? The Tina argument's very, very powerful today. If you remember the Tina argument, there is no alternative.
Yes.
So that's what we've seen. We've just seen massive liquidity pumping from central banks, the US, the European banks, and that's why people have bought stocks. But you're right. If you look at it on the ground level, it makes very little sense. But then again, if you look at the stock market, the stocks that have gone up have not been the likes of the Marks and Spencers. The stocks that have gone up have been the likes of Amazon, Facebook, Google, etc. And those stocks, the ones that are saying, the world's still in trouble, if you think about it, because if the world was in a great place, people wouldn't be paying up high PE multiples for companies where there was certainty of earnings. They would be changing their positions and buying more cyclical stocks. And we still really haven't seen that. So I guess if you look at it, even though the market's going up, what's been driving the market is your high growth shares. The value shares haven't really participated in any great meaningful way. I mean, I haven't looked at banking shares lately, but when I last looked, banking shares kind of recovered a little, but then have done pretty much nothing for ages now. So what you're actually saying is the market's been quite sensible. It's buying growth shares because it's worried about growth. So it is worried about the Marks and Spencer person losing their jobs. That actually the market's saying, yes, I'm worried about it. I want to buy certainty of growth. And you were paying very high multiples. I mean, you talked about Robinhood traders, Lindsay.
Mm.
How's this for a stat? The average Robinhood trader is 31 years old. But I found even more fascinating this morning, I was looking at some statistics. Robinhood traders, the website's been down 47 times this year so far.
Yes.
That is true. But even more worryingly, do you know there's no call center you can phone? So if you're new to the market and you've bought a share and you bought Kodak or you bought something that's going bankrupt, and then suddenly you're along that position and you want to close out, or you're short a position and you want to close out, and the website goes down, what on earth do you do? It is crazy days, and that has what the Fed has done by putting so much liquidity into the markets it's taken away moral hazard. It is slightly scary, I'll be honest.
I use IG myself. I use IG South Africa. And I promise you, their backup is brilliant. I don't know anything about Robinhood, but I do know that they've added 3 million accounts, I think, in the second quarter of this year. It may be just over the... I don't know. But anyway, Robinhood is unbelievable. And I think it's quite dangerous. Do you not,
I think it's very
dangerous.
Do you not
think so?
I mean, you and I both in the markets in 2000... We saw what happened. People lost a lot of money, believing they could only make money in stock markets. It's very dangerous. Here's another interesting statistic for you this morning. I've got lots to tell you.
Thank you.
Insiders in the US have been selling now for the last 3 to 4 months.
What does that mean? So insiders?
So directors of companies are selling their shares.
Yes.
So it's usually a very good indicator that people in the know, if they think their share prices are expensive or they think that earnings in the next 12 months will be poor, it's not insider trading. It's just companies looking at their results or looking at their environment and saying, we don't like what we're seeing. And then looking at their current share prices, especially the ones that have been given shares, saying, I'm going to start selling some shares and banking some profits. And we've had so while the Robinhood traders are buying, the people in companies are selling. And they would presumably have a little bit more information at hand in terms of what the environment looks like. And they're saying it's the biggest selling since 2006 from insiders.
But maybe they just need to put an extra wing on their house in Connecticut or buy a new house in Hawaii or something like that. I mean, maybe it's not anything to do with market timing or market perception from their point of view. Maybe it's just because they just want to get a bit of money because they've got so much with the S&P and other stock markets at all-time record highs or close to it. Maybe it's that.
Look, it's entirely possible it can be their company director's own cash flow issues. But when I look at the trend, it's 3 out of 4 months of insider selling, and it's over $15 billion a month. That's the greatest number in years. So, yes, you're right. It could be for personal reasons, but it's an interesting trend to keep an eye out on.
Mm.
And when you look historically, insider selling has been a good indicator of the stock market. You know, I also speak to a number of fund managers at the moment, and whilst they're not buying put protection for their portfolios in South Africa, they are buying gold as some sort of hedge against the markets and massive liquidity injections. So not everyone is completely convinced this market's only going up one way and that's up. But yes, you're right. It might just be a personal cash flow issue, but it's something to watch.
Well, no, en masse. I mean, if it's a trend, it's not just one person that suddenly decides he wants to put in a new kitchen in his holiday home. The point is that if it's a movement rather than just an isolated case, then it does warrant attention. Look at the euro dollar at 119. It was 106 at the beginning of the year. Look at the gold price. Just 2 weeks ago, in fact, only 10 days ago, it was 1864 it went to. 1864. It's now 2008. There's something going on there. Obviously, bonds don't give you any yield, so gold is as good as a bond, if you like, and with the dollar under pressure. But there is definitely something going on. There's a huge shift this year, and it's not to do with the pandemic. Maybe that's exacerbated it. But there are huge trend changes this year. Although we're quiet at the moment because it's the Northern Hemisphere summer holidays, Joanne, I think the next 6 months are going to be as astonishing as the first 6 months.
Well, look, if the markets keep going up, clients will be very happy. But my feeling would be that one should be cautious in the next 6 months because this rally we've seen has just been truly unbelievable.
Mm.
Back to your point about gold, I think gold and the US growth assets are actually quite correlated in the sense that there's just so much liquidity around. So back to my point of earlier, when you debase money, it kind of makes sense for gold to go up. It's not just been gold. Silver's also been going up and rhodium. And I last time I looked, platinum was also going up. So the fact is, you've got a lot of these precious metals, or let's put it a different way, scarce assets. So growth shares are scarce assets. Gold is a scarce asset. And scarce assets are being bid up in a world where money is losing its value. You can't simply just keep printing money and expect there not to be some repercussions. Now, right now, we're not getting inflation in the world or kind of CPI type inflation. But certainly we're getting asset inflation in the likes of gold and the likes of growth assets. So I do think the two are highly correlated. Interestingly enough, a lot of people seem to want to buy gold because of inflation concerns. And if you look historically, the correlation between the two is actually very low. So gold is much more of an issue that you buy for deflation reasons than inflation necessarily. So I think in a world where growth is scarce, that's why you see gold going up. PIMCO wrote a really good research report a couple of years back looking at gold and long-term treasuries. And what they found out, that if you looked at gold, it had a what they would call a modified duration of, I think, 27, which meant essentially that if you think real yields will stay low for a very long time, gold is a very good way to play that because it has a very strong duration on those very low real yields. So simply put, in a world where money is being debased, gold makes a lot of sense. I've seen numbers that they think gold could go to $2,400. It's entirely possible. But, you know, when people make predictions, they usually get them wrong. But what I can tell you is the gold market is still a very, very tiny market. And if those Robin Hood traders decide they want to buy gold, this thing could go up a lot more.
Well, of course it could. And also, never mind Robin Hood, what about Warren Buffett? Because his company, I don't think it's him himself. I think it's the people that he's grooming to take over from him and Charlie Munger. They've suddenly said, let's have a little bit of a nibble at Barrick. And that has sort of set the gold market on fire because people revere Berkshire Hathaway. And so that's also a contributing factor.
Oh, I agree. I think that's a stamp of approval from Warren. That's going to help. But I think a lot of people have been talking about gold for the last few months now, and the technicals behind it look very, very compelling. You know, why would you want to be long currencies when central banks can just print it? Mm. I mean, if I go back to my scarcity argument, currency is not scarce, but gold is. So you have to pay up for scarce assets. And yeah, so I think gold makes a lot of sense in portfolios today.
And also in your previous existence, your company and yourself always promoted gold. And in fact, you were bullish of gold for the last couple of years. So you've done very well out of it.
Yeah, the trick with gold, though, it from a long term perspective, I don't think you want to have a lot of gold in your portfolio. It's an asset class to diversify you at times of stress. But if the world does recover, which one hopes it will do, you don't want to have a lot of gold in your portfolio. So there's a time to hold it and a time not to be in it. I certainly don't think it's a buy and hold investment. I think maybe you've got a couple of months still. But if we slowly start seeing all this fiscal spending start to work and we start to see economies around the world start to recover, and who knows, even a vaccine maybe. I know the Russians are working on one at the moment.
Yeah,
if there's a vaccine, it's entirely possible that the world economy starts to recover, and then you probably wouldn't want to be long gold. Plus, if it starts getting too many headlines, if too many people start talking about gold, you must also be nervous because, it's like all investments, if everyone starts talking about it, then that's probably time to sell it.
Exactly. The last 4.5 minutes of our conversation has been taken up with gold. So that tells you something. So maybe
yes,
we should be a little bit cautious about it. Well, in your position as an IFA, independent financial advisor, are you going to concentrate on South Africa, international, or a combination of the two?
A combination of the two. I think one, you can't live in South Africa today and not have offshore assets in your portfolios. The growth here, I think, is going to be weak for a couple of years. I speak to a number of fund managers I respect, and I'm talking about 3 to 4 years of poor growth in South Africa. I think we've got massive structural problems here on the employment front. We've got debt levels that are beyond frightening, and a government that seems to be able to talk the talk but not walk the walk when it comes to actually implementing structural reform. So I think if you're a client today and you want to live in, if you're a South African, you want to live in South Africa, then I think it's very important to have quite a lot of your money offshore. I think the risks here of poor growth are incredibly high. Look, I don't think that we'll probably default on our debt in South Africa, but what it does mean, though, is that government's ability to spend our way rich is going to be very difficult when an awful lot of our budget every month is being paid on interest, paying our debt levels back. So there's very little firepower on behalf of government to get this economy moving. I know they're talking about changes to Reg 28 at the moment in our pension fund legislation, which is somewhat worrying. In most countries of the world, infrastructure spending is kind of what they're highlighting would be a very good story for South Africa because we need growth. But if it's forced upon people, that's not a good idea. So we'd have to watch that space very carefully. But I do think if ultimately a currency is the price of a country's PE rating.
Yes.
I think the rand in the long run is going to depreciate. It already has, but I think in the long run, the growth numbers here are just not going to be compelling. So from a long-term perspective. But having said all that, Lindsay, I've never met anyone in my life who ever gets the currency right, and I'm certainly not going to try and call the currency. But what I can tell you from an opportunity perspective, the kind of stocks you can buy in South Africa versus the kind of stocks you can buy offshore, there's just no comparison. You can't get global tech in South Africa like you get in the US, or healthcare, or biotech, or even as an emerging market manager I was talking to yesterday told me, electronic vehicles. I mean, electronic vehicles is going to be a huge growth driver in the future. Where do you buy that in South Africa? So it's not just a currency issue. It's not just a growth issue, which I'm really worried about. I do think South African investors need to have quite a lot of money offshore. Having said that, the bond market in South Africa from a yield perspective is incredibly attractive still. So South Africans are actually, I think, bizarrely quite fortunate. They can have a lot of their equities offshore and have fixed income investments in South Africa, giving them very nice yields, because most people in the world would love the yields we've got here. Even after the interest rate cuts, we've still got very attractive yields on money markets and in bonds.
Okay, so what do we do? We have to have some South African exposure. Is it banks? Is it financials in general? Is it commodities? Is it retailers because of the bounce back, because of level two coming into play and the economy being freed up? It's very difficult. You've got to have some South African exposure. Where do you put it?
Well, it depends what you define as South African exposure. Do you call Naspers listed in the JSE?
No, South African I don't.
Exposure?
No, I want domestic stocks now. I really want
domestic.
Yeah.
You want domestic stocks? Okay. Yes. So there are probably a few mid-cap shares you could be looking at that might be interesting, particularly the ones that earn their living offshore. Again, I think you have to look at dollar income coming through. I'd be very wary still of the banks and retailers in South Africa. The banking results have been beyond awful coming through. And I still think this economy is in for a whole heap of trouble. You might know, Lindsay, that finally South Africans are allowed to drink again legally and smoke again legally. Mm. I use the word legally because we know what was happening prior to that from today. But I think there's been an enormous amount of damage done to the South African economy. I think a huge number of people lose their jobs. The numbers I've seen are up to 3 million people losing their jobs. I don't know how we recover from that. So if you're reliant on the SA consumer for your business, be it the banks or be it retailers, I still think that it's going to be difficult for a while. Though what I will tell you is that the hedge fund managers I'm talking to at the moment who've been short some of these companies they're much more reluctant now to be shorting these companies. So they haven't quite gone to the point where they say, can I go long SA banks or long SA retailers? But they're certainly not shorting them anymore, which probably tells me we're getting very close to the bottom of a lot of these companies. Because if we look at the year-to-date performance, there have been some horrific numbers out of these companies in terms of share price performance.
Yes.
So, yes, if you're brave and you have maybe a 5 or 10-year horizon, perhaps some of these companies are more interesting. I will say that if you're relying on mean reversion to buy these companies, please don't, because I think the future South Africa is very different to the past. And if you're trying to go back to those old heady days of growth in South Africa, I think we're many, many years away from that. So please don't use mean reversion as a reason to buy those companies. So back to your question, Lindsay, if I'm going to be buying SA assets, I'd rather be buying SA bonds and or various SA corporate bond issuance. So it's very careful because some of the yields are quite low. But I'd still be very wary of SA companies. Most of the managers we invest in that we're looking for our clients at the moment have a very strong bias towards rand hedges. But the commodity shares, I mean, maybe you call that a rand SA domestic stock. I don't. But the platinum companies are still offering very enticing yields, good business models there. And the gold shares, if they're good enough for Warren Buffett, they should be good enough for us.
Well put. How do we get in touch with you, Joanne, as an independent financial advisor?
I'm on Twitter, on Mad About Markets, but cringe, but I love the title, Mad About Markets. So if you want to get hold of me, they can hold of me there.
Okay, so just Twitter, no email address at the moment.
There is also, there's an email address. It's my surname, BainhamJoe@gmail.com.
Joanne, thanks so much for your time. That's Joanne Bainham, independent financial advisor. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.